This is Twit.
Ming Chi Kuo, or as you say, Guo Ji Ming, Ming Ji Guo Guo, has
Guo Ming Chi
has been very busy writing analyst note after note. Holy cow.
I think it was one note, but every blog wants to have eight posts out of one note.
Oh, maybe that's it. iPhone 13, here's the disappointment, no USB-C. Do you think it will also not have a port, or will it be a Lightning port, Renee?
No, so he said that Apple's not going to go USB-C, and he stated a slew of reasons, including the waterproofing is slightly worse, the size is slightly bigger, and USB-C is aging out the same way Lightning is aging out. He thinks they're going to go portless, but it's not ready yet.
Like
their contact technology is not good enough yet, so they're going to do that in a future version, and this one is going to still have all the ports on all the models, including a Mini, which I think some people were fearful would go away.
Yeah, because the Mini did not sell, or at least the rumor is it did not sell all that well this time around. Supposedly they stopped production on the Mini. They had enough.
5%, but we don't know what their expectations were, and they plan so far ahead that they've probably got that all tooled up already anyway, because it sounds like an S year.
He also said no notch. Hole punch.
So this year, slightly smaller notch, because in one of the ways they're increasing battery capacity is to flatten out the Face ID system. And that's going to let them have a smaller notch. Next year, a hole punch. The year after that, under display, which I think is aggressive, because when you look at the current under display cameras, it's basically like that Frodo, like butter over too much bread. It's smoochy, and you can see the pixelation. Because all they're doing is spreading the pixels around to try to shoot through them, and then using AI, like machine learning, to patch the holes in the camera. And it looks it right now.
He equivocated over Touch ID. He said, our latest survey indicates there is no visibility on the current schedule for the iPhone to adopt either USB-C or Touch ID in the sensor. We believe the phone will significantly improve the user experience if it adopts the power button with the Touch ID sensor. However, there is no visibility on the timing of adopting this new specification.
In other words, he had it in his iPhone 15 report for 2 years from now. And I think a lot of people, based on previous reports, including his, were thinking, if not this year, then next year for both Periscope, Zoom, and under display fingerprint. So he sounds like he's pushing that further down. I'm still hopeful. I really want both those things. Like immediately, if not sooner.
He did also say that not next year, not this year, not next year, but in 2023, he believes Apple might do a foldable phone, a 7.5 to 8-inch foldable phone in 2023. Having some significant experience with both the Microsoft Duo, which is a two-screen phone, and the Galaxy Fold 2, which is a foldable phone, I'm going to say no hurry, Apple.
The idea is basically an iPhone Pro Max that would open up into an iPad Mini that would have Apple Pencil support. But you know, like they've been prototyping this stuff since 2010. They just don't think it's ready for prime
time.
It
really isn't.
And I don't know if they're their latest rumors are trying to use ceramic shield to improve the strength of like ceramic impregnation in the substrate to try to improve the strength of the display, but that kind of stuff. They're a patient company, you know. They don't rush anything to market, so we'll see what those timelines really are. But he did say that this is not in production. This is still in early testing phase, so it's not even moved to a product yet.
And Alex, you're not going to like this. LiDAR still only in the Pro and Pro Max versions of the iPhone 13.
It's just a rumor.
It's still
on a lot of them. I think the thing that I'm most interested in is the 120 frames a second.
Yes, higher frame rate. Why do you like that?
Well, I think that is our for this decade, that'll be our resting space, is 120 frames a second, 8K HDR with surround is going to be where we eventually find our way this decade. And I don't know when we'll go higher than that. And so that you're starting to see that those pieces slowly come into play. I don't know if Apple will get to that. I mean, I think 4K 120 is probably where we get to. But 120 frames a second is past the human, what most people will call human frame rate, which is somewhere between, 60 and 90 frames a second is where you stop. You know, it just starts looking like it's there, right? And so at 120, you're over that. 120 is also interesting because it's evenly divisible by 60, 30, and 24. So
I didn't even think of 24.
Once you get to 100, all three of the main frame rates are supported by 120 frames a second.
So that's a perfect frame rate.
If you if you capture 120 frames a second and you say, well, I really wish it was 24, you can interpolate. The tricky part is in reinterpolating the motion blur. So you have to figure out how you're going to do that. So you and but that's a really known thing. It's just processor power. So we're getting to a point where
we have the
processor power.
So you take out 4 frames for every keyframe and somehow add motion blur from those 4 frames to the keyframe.
But you have all that information. So you have the so between those 4 frames, you can calculate the pixel velocity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can reinterpolate those frames.
Does it?
It does that to show movies at 24 frames per second.
With ProMotion? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, you can, and it also saves the battery power,
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, and so it, well, with in movies, it's a little different because it only shows those, it's showing them, I think, 4 times, I think, you know, to for each frame, you know, but what I'm talking about is going back down. The problem is that when you go, it's one thing to go from the movies from 24 to 120 or whatever, but going the other direction, if you shoot at 120 and your shutter speed is set for 120 and you go down to 24, it'll look really stuttery because there's no motion blur.
Flickery.
You know, and so, but what, so you have to reinsert the motion blur on every on people's arms.
But you have the data. Unlike upscaling.
You have all that data.
You have the data.
Right. Yeah. And so you have the data. And so you can calculate, basically you can interpolate between those keyframes. You can build a curve between every pixel and then rebuild that.
So interestingly, the guy I was referring to earlier who said we've actually solved virtual reality, it's called a motion picture, also said that the reason 24 frames is good is that dreamlike state is part of the whole thing of kind of suspended disbelief entering the dreamlike state. And he was skeptical about
that
the higher.
That's why soap operas don't work.
Yeah, he was skeptical about the higher frame rate.
Well, so my understanding, but Alex can speak to this, is that it's 120 still isn't enough. Like for Apple, 120 still isn't enough. They don't think it's high enough. They've patented 240.
Jesus.
But most people, they want to get to 480.
Also divisible by 24, by the way.
Well, but apparently at 480, you can no longer see the flicker of a single diode. Like that becomes a constant source of illumination for you. And that's incredibly power draining now. But they've patented 240, and I think they're pushing to 480.
I wouldn't think you could see the flicker after
10-year problem.
After 60.
Well,
we don't see the flickers.
You can.
Aren't fluorescents 60 hertz?
Remember, it's not frame rate. It's hertz.
Yeah.
The big thing at 120 is that it may not be good for film. You may leave film at 23.8. It is hilarious that our entire frame rate for film for a billions and billions and billions of dollars of industry is based on some cheap filmmakers in the early 20s who just didn't want to pay
stock
for more celluloid. Like they're like, how low can we go before we have to, you know?
But it might have been an accident that worked. You know, it might have been something that they did to save money. It turned out it actually worked.
It's got cultural inertia.
Programmable.
So it's cultural inertia. I mean, like we just decided that was it, and we watch it a lot, and we're fine with it. And so
what do you do? Do you do 30 or 60?
I have to admit, just because I can see the interpolation on the TV, so I will turn everything to 23.8 all the time.
It looks awful.
So that I don't see it.
It looks like it's rubber or plastic.
But it's not.
Like soap operas.
But that rubber. But the thing is that rubbery look that everyone complains about is not because it's 60 frames a second or 120 frames a second. It's the interpolation that makes it look soft. And so where this is really interesting at 120 frames a second, let's say 8K, is sports, is documentaries, is
real
nature,
life.
nature things, concerts, all those things. Because imagine having an 85 inch 8K, 120 frame per second watching a concert. You know, is going to look amazing. It's going to be looking like you are there, you know, and it's, in fact, the biggest problem I had with some of the stuff that we've done at really large scale, 8K, 120 frame per second HDR is actual camera movement becomes uncomfortable for the viewer. So it actually changes it where if you move, like what I find is that if at that resolution and that size, if it fills my periphery, so all I can see is the screen at 8K, 120 frame per second HDR, when you move the camera, I can feel it in my stomach. I mean, it's actually less comfortable to watch because my brain has stopped thinking that I'm looking at a movie. Like it is like it just looks at it and it's processing it as reality, which has a whole bunch of opens up a can of worms of all things we should worry about. But the point is that that's a different experience. I mean, you can literally have at that point if that continues to be the case as they work, you get a roller coaster ride that is in your house, you know? So but you literally feel it at that, and in the same way that you feel it in VR. But you really feel it at that resolution.
At Universal Studios, you know, if you've ever been the Simpsons ride, which is you're just in a thing that's going like this. In fact, they even say if you start to get nauseous, just look over and your bags are over there and they're not moving. And
yeah,
you go, oh, I feel better.
A lot of stuff.
I feel better now. But that your gut feels like you're going down because it's a roller coaster ride. Yeah. Now, that was the very first or at least a very early VR ride experience. Now they've got, the Transformers ride is with practicals as well as video, and it's very effective. I mean, it completely fools you.
I mean, the big challenge with that.
Ride that was very virtual for a long time at Universal, weird to look.
It's nauseating. It really is because it's not. You know, you're not doing anything. Go ahead, Alan.
I mean, the big issue that you have to get over at some point is also the for a lot of these higher resolution, higher frame rate is going to be our bandwidth caps in the United States for our bandwidth.
Right.
You know, so at one point, you know, whatever terabytes that Comcast give you won't. I mean, one movie will be a terabyte.
Right. Right. That's going to be a big problem. So. You're going to have to move to Norway if you want to watch these things. Sorry.
I think like most content, though, like they deliver it on device. Like we have the full HDR Dolby Vision system on the iPhone now, and YouTube doesn't support it. Nobody really supports it. A lot of the streaming services do, but Samsung phones go up to 8K now, so you're shooting your own content at that point, and that always seems to lead what you can play back like 1 or 2 years anyway.
Yeah.
If only Apple had its own content distribution, They could start producing 120 frame per second HDR stuff if they only had their own channel.
If only. Do you know anything we don't know?
Yeah. No, I'm making
By the
it
way,
up.
They have Ted Lasso.
If I knew it,
Ted Lasso,
I wouldn't tell you.
One Golden Globe.
Oh, we missed one phone. Wenming-Chi also reported on an iPhone SE 3, which is not the previously reported one that was supposed to be full screen with Touch ID and the power button and slightly larger. This one would be. And I have trouble believing this because it doesn't seem right to me, but it would be exactly the same body, but with 5G and an even more powerful processor. And I don't know how that battery would last more than 3 hours if that's seriously a device that's being made.
Here's a rumor I think you won't like, Alex Lindsay. This is from a patently Apple. They spotted an update to the Final Cut Pro trademark registration in which Apple added the words rental of software. To say that Final Cut Pro was SAS. Protected. Yeah.
We've talked about this a lot in office hours already.
Would you rent Final Cut Pro?
I think some people will. Absolutely. And I don't think that...
I think it's more equitable, to be honest. If you want people to continue to develop... I always feel guilty because I paid for Logic, I don't know, 8 years ago.
I paid for Final Cut 10 years ago and gotten updates for 10 years.
I feel like that's wrong.
Because of the phrasing of the patent, my guess is that this is for... bonus, like they've done a lot of bonus content where you get a lot of additional resources, especially in Logic, especially in GarageBand. And there's a whole bunch of services that if they use Final Cut as a platform, there's a whole bunch of services they can deliver
they can
over the top
that
of that
yeah.
on a subscription basis or part of the Apple One bundle. Well, like just increasing the value of the Apple One bundle will increase the value of all of Apple services.
Was there a consensus on office hours? Because you have a lot of creators on office
hours. I think that a lot of folks, you know, the pressure that Apple has also is Resolve that is free, you know, to do the base version.
From DaVinci, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that number one is we don't think that Apple is going to get, you know, we're not going to force everybody who already owns it to go into some kind of rental, and you probably will still be able to buy it. That's the guess. And then beyond that, but the nice thing about it is, I want to play with Final Cut. Right now, there's no way to really, other than the 90-day that they gave, there's no way to say, I don't know how much I'm going to use it. Maybe I'll just pay $10 a month or $5 a month. I don't think it would be nearly as much as what Adobe charges. So I think that you might even have a pro pack that is, you know, a fraction of money compared to what Adobe has been charging for what they're doing. And then that allows you to get into it and not force you into a 1-year agreement. You just want to use it for the next 3 or 4 months. Those are all things that I think Apple could do to be more aggressive about letting people play with the software. The $300 I think is a high market. They gave you 90 days for free and then you could just rent it after that for, X number of dollars a month. There's probably a higher uptick of using the software. So I think that, and then you could buy it if you want. If you want to rent it, I think they just let you buy it in the same way that you buy movies or you rent movies. And I don't think that Apple has to separate
both.
Those. And so if anything, I think it makes it more accessible to more people.
Actually, Microsoft has announced that they call it the perpetual license, you know, by the box software, Microsoft Office. There's going to be a Mac version as well as a Windows version later this year. They're going to continue to offer that. But it's mostly intended for businesses where they don't want anything to change. they don't subscribe.
Don't you feel like Microsoft is going to be completely SaaS? Like, I think even Windows is going to be SaaS soon. Just their entire thing is so Azure and cloud focused.
Well, I think it's going to be like Alex described, where you there will be some skew where you can buy it outright. It'll probably be much more expensive. You know, buying Office is prohibitively expensive. It's a lot cheaper to rent it as long as you don't add up the years over time. I have a feeling they'll figure out a way to do both. I don't know.
Microsoft One, you just plug in your computer and they stream you everything like a Chromebook.
I've been an advocate. I think it's going to happen this year. They call it Microsoft Virtual Desktop or Windows Virtual Desktop, where you don't own Windows. You don't even have it installed. But this
and that answers
good.
Your M1 Mac problems,
yes.
Right? Like, you don't even have to care that it's an M1 Mac. You just run
It'd
Windows
be fantastic
on it.
Fantastic for us Mac users, because it's just a virtual Windows in the cloud. It also solves the security issues, which are big. There's still a lot of 0 days every month. Microsoft has to fix all these things. It'd be great if they could just fix it in the background in your virtual Windows. But again, there'll always be people. I know there are people who say, oh, no, I have to own it. It has to be on my computer. And so I think they'll offer, you know, they'll have to offer both. But I think that's what they'd like the future of Windows to be.